Collection.
Welcome to Infinite Future. I'm Todd Thomas, and today we're exploring the innovations shaping tomorrow's world. You're watching Now Media TV.
Hello, and welcome to Infinite Future. On this show, we explore the technologies, ideas, and innovations shaping the world of tomorrow. But the future is not only built in labs or venture-backed startups. Sometimes the future is built on ladders, job sites, installs, by crews and trucks and tools, and people who know how to turn a brand idea into something customers can actually see, touch, and experience. Today's guest is Austin Park, founder and operator of Visual Installations. Austin comes from deep blue-collar roots and brings a hands-on, practical approach to commercial signage and graphics, backed by modern technology and disciplined execution. His team coordinates and manages branding and signage programs for leading retailers, restaurants, banks, and iconic brands across the country. That means Austin sits at the intersection of brand identity, physical infrastructure, technology, operations, and trust. This conversation is about more than signs. It is about how the future of business depends on the people who can connect modern tools with real-world execution. It's about how technology can elevate the trades, how brands come alive in physical spaces, and how blue-collar innovation may become one of the most important engines in the next economy. Austin, welcome to Infinite Future.
It's good to be with you, Todd. I appreciate it.
So, Austin, what first pulled you into the world of signage, graphics, and visual installations?
Yeah, it's a really funny story. It was a complete accident, as most great things are. When I was like 16, 17, a friend of mine was doing this on the side, and he was studying to be a paramedic, and he just had me driving in places. And I was 17. I loved to drive. So I just went from store to store with him, putting the stuff up and learned it, and nothing really came of it, but I, you know, have a construction background. So I just kind of picked it up pretty naturally. And next thing I know, like almost 10 years later, I have hardly talked to him in that 10 years. And he just calls me out of nowhere, says, "Hey, can you do something for me down in the Tampa?" And I'm like, "Yeah, dude, I love fishing down there. I'll just make a fishing day of it, you know?" And I did the job. I didn't even know I was getting paid. I was just trying to help a buddy out. And then he sent me a PO that was more than I made in a whole week of construction from 1 hour of work. And I was like, "Yeah, I can do this." So next thing I know, I was like, "Hey, you got some more of this?" And he said, "Yeah." So me and my German Shepherd just got in my truck and just been traveling ever since, doing this on the road. And yeah, freaking loved it.
That's fantastic. I love that. Yeah. When people hear commercial signage, they may think about signs on buildings. What are they missing about the complexity of this work?
It's wild to even consider. Most people I tell what I do, you don't think about the guy that puts the sign up. You don't think about the brand, you don't think about the window graphic or the wall mural. It just is there, you know? And so the key to it is you have these very skilled workers that come in when the stores close or before the hours start, or have to be in and out very quickly. And it just totally gives the whole place a facelift with a single graphic, you know, a single mural. And there's a lot of moving parts. There's a whole lot that goes into the design, staying on brand, keeping the consistency across all the different states, but also tailoring it to the different states, the different towns, the different histories that's intertwined through the United States and Canada, that where we mostly operate. And you know, the truth is, it's a wild niche of the construction industry that is, you know, that makes a huge difference. Is you're the last person to touch someone's brand before it comes to life. You know, it's a privilege for sure.
Yeah, you're really the face of that construction project, right?
Yeah, but you also have to be the one in the background. You're like, you are the face of the like getting it done, but they don't need to know you or who you are. You just need to get it done. Like it's kind of like, even in our own branding, we have to stay unbranded in a lot of cases. Like when we show up to a job site, you can't really have your logo on there in a lot of cases, or, you know, because what could happen is you show up to, let's just, for an example, say you show up to a Nike install wearing an Adidas shirt or something like that. So it's a very strict on their own image when you're on the job site, just as much as it is being the last one to touch their brand before it goes live.
So you've got a blue collar background, you worked construction. How did that shape the way you lead visual installations today?
I think it had a huge impact, to be honest, because I've been that person in the lift, on the ladder. I still am sometimes. And being able to bridge the gap between the white collar project manager, designer, brand ambassador, whatever, to the guy on the ground that has put the graphic up, who has firsthand experience of everything. I mean, there's a difference between doing a job in New York City and Montezuma, Georgia. You know, Montezuma is a tiny little itty bitty town. It's easy to just back my truck up to a job site and, you know, put a graphic on a window and leave. In New York City, it's a very different operation. I mean, the traffic is insane. You have to pay for parking, which is expensive. And then you have to carry your box and your tools and your graphics and all your stuff down the street. And you have to follow strict rules on how much of the sidewalk you're using. And it's a very different thing. So having done it all, from San Francisco, New York City, as well as the small towns in the Southeast, or even in the Midwest, I can empathize a lot more with both sides of the operation. And my job is to bridge that gap, to be a sponge for the criticism and frustrations both may have in any scenario, but also be able to speak to both of them because I've done both. So it's made a huge, huge impact.
That's really interesting. Yeah. What does it take to coordinate branding and signage programs across multiple locations and markets and really across client expectations?
I mean, it's a huge undertaking, if we're being totally honest, because the combination of staying on brand, but also tailoring things to whichever city it is. It also comes to being able to speak white collar, blue collar, you know, depending on what bridge you're trying to gap. It goes to project management, relationship management, to brand management. It's a very multifaceted job that people have to undertake and stay on track with that. And a lot of the cases where I mostly am on the install piece of this, you are trying to take what you learn from somebody else doing the install in New York City, as you are to Atlanta, as you are to Wyoming, and make sure that everybody is doing it the exact same, because there's a critical piece to brands being consistent, but also being tailored. It is a fine line to walk when it comes to a lot of that stuff, for sure.
That's really interesting. Where do you see the biggest gap between what brands imagine and what actually has to happen in the field?
I would say that the systems. So we have different clients, and it's our job to make our client look good in front of their client. And so it's a constant thing, but you can tell the brands that are successful based off of how much proaction they do. So if they are keeping records of all of their stores and we do a survey and they can use that survey repeatedly, but also, hey, they did a remodel, so the survey for the windows are different now, or this wall is size is different, and they have the records and keep updates as things go, you cut back significantly on reprints and go backs and all the different crazy things. And if you don't have the system to keep doing that, it's a very chaotic situation. You spend tons of time in meetings that you don't need to have if somebody would have just done the one thing. And so people putting systems in place and making sure they follow that is going to keep the consistency there for sure. One of my mentors, member of the Three Comma Club, he told me that when you're building your company, you make a system and break it, make a system and break it, make a system and break it over and over until it's bulletproof. And the people that have the most success in, as far as my clients go, are the ones that have their system. When it breaks, they post-mortem it, fix this, make it bulletproof again, and adapt to all the technologies and all of the nuances in the world that you have to manage. So, yeah.
Yeah, I've never heard it put quite that way. Build a company, break it, build a company. But that's exactly right, right?
Yeah, when it comes to the system, yeah. I mean, yeah. You want the system repeatable. It's the whole flywheel. You know, Jeff Bezos has repeatedly said the flywheel is what built Amazon. Once you built the flywheel and adjust it and adapt it until it is a wheel instead of a square, you've got to make it bulletproof. It's a hard job, let me tell you. I mean, goodness, I can't tell you how many times I fail. I fail all the freaking time. It's so wild to me that even after all these years, I still miss some little thing or whatever, you know, because some update to this program, we skipped this, and this AI didn't move this, and that automation didn't go through, because like the tiniest little thing can derail it. And it's just making the system to keep up with it all is a lot.
Well, there's a lot of conversation, you know, these days about companies that really can survive long term. And oftentimes it comes down to those that can evolve, those that can break and fix it and iterate and learn. So the ability to be flexible and to evolve may be the biggest characteristic in companies that survive.
And speed. You have to be able to evolve with speed, because if you don't, like, it's almost like, don't try to avoid making mistakes. It's learning from mistakes quickly. Otherwise, it goes on and on and on. And again, same mentor told me, he's like, if you 10x your company now, you're just 10xing the problems. You got to fix it now so that you're not just doing that. So it is speed with the learning and adaptation, like you said.
Great advice, great perspective. What stands out here is that the future is not just conceptual. It has to be installed, coordinated, measured, transported, managed, and delivered. When we come back, we'll talk about how modern technology is changing the blue-collar trades and what it takes to scale trust in a national installation business.
We'll be right back with more conversations at the edge of technology and transformation. Stay tuned.
All right, that was good.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
And we're back. I'm Todd Thomas, and this is Infinite Future on Now Media TV. Let's look ahead.
Welcome back to Infinite Future. Stay connected to this show and every Now Media favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Visit Now Media TV, or you can always download the Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS, or catch episodes on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple, or wherever you like to pick up your podcasts. If you want to learn more about innovation and how to cultivate innovation within your company, my new book, Starving for Innovation, is coming this fall. If you'd like to learn more about the book and how innovation can rediscover your business, you can visit starvingforinnovation.com, check out the book, learn a little bit more, and go ahead and pre-order your book today. Now we're back, and welcome back. I'm here with Austin Park, founder and operator of Visual Installations. We started by talking about the people and execution behind commercial signage. Now I want to move into the technology side of this conversation, because the next generation of blue-collar businesses will not be built by replacing skilled people. It will be built by giving skilled people better systems, better data, better communication, and better tools. Austin, how has technology changed the way signage and graphics are managed today?
Significantly. I mean, there's so many project management tools, so many CRMs, so many different tools out there that you can pick whichever works. I know a lot of wrap shops use this technology, and a lot of installation companies use this technology, or whatever the different software that they're using. And it's wild to see how AI is changing that game with a lot of them. Blue collar tends to be about 10 years, give or take, behind most white collar businesses when it comes to adopting technology. But the ones that do adopt it, again, how I mentioned before, the speed, with the learning and adapting with speed, is a critical piece of that. So the people I see that are winning the most in this industry are the ones that are adopting that technology. They're finding and exploring, as part of your job as a leader, what project allows that, what project management tool or what CRM allows us to execute with high efficiency and make our clients look good and have a successful install or a successful brand launch. So it's a massive deal for sure.
I've heard more and more people say speed is the only differentiator left. That everybody can duplicate everything, but if you are fast, if you can be faster than everybody else, that's the only true differentiator left.
Yeah, Patrick Bet David says, outwork, out-strategize, out-improve, outlast. And the outlast part is the piece that a lot of people miss, because people give up right when you need to double down in a lot of cases. And the people that push it that one more time, you know, or make that one shift, you holding on for that moment, because there's so many things that happen, that adapt, that change, whether it's an economy or a war or a currency change or a new brand that's launching quickly. There's so many things that can change the game. It's the beauty of capitalism, is that everybody's a creator in one way or another. And so Yeah, you have to outlast the people that are not using technology, because you will go past them. It may seem like you're losing, but you have to outlast them. You have to outwork them, out improve them with the speed. The speed is such a critical piece.
So in your business, where does technology make the biggest difference? Where does it help the most?
Most recently, it is AI and automation. There's automations even before AI was around, but being able to leverage both has made a big deal. So we have, for instance, we are doing 5 times the work I was in 2021 with probably a third of the staff. And I didn't let them go because of AI. During 2020-21, things got really rough, obviously, for pretty much every business. Again, it came to outlasting, because even the clients of ours that went out of business, others absorbed that business. And even in people in my own industry that went out of business, we absorbed their business and were able to grow. But I didn't have to, I was able to use the automation and AI in the technologies to make things happen on the back end, which allows for the team to be more front-facing with the clients. Again, one of our biggest hurdles is the speed. I have a really hard time with this, mostly because response time, because you're bridging the gap between two people. It's almost like playing telephone constantly. And so we have been working on trying to fix that flywheel so that the response times are faster. But AI has been a big piece of that. Doing the back end work, nothing client facing, but doing the back end work has freed up the staff that can be in front of our partners and in front of our clients. And that's a major piece. Andy Frisella says that the value is in the inefficiencies. And what he means by that is you are bringing value to your client with the things that may seem inefficient to you. But that's the important piece. You got to have the human element. I mean, as much as I love AI, you got to have the human element for your business to succeed.
Well, that's really interesting. On the show, we talked to people that are utilizing AI across so many different industries. And it's really interesting to hear kind of that, you know, what you're expressing of, look, we didn't downsize because of AI, but it allows us to do a lot more work and takes over the back end stuff, allowing my people to be customer facing. Like that. Yeah. That's a great argument for AI and the power of AI. It's really interesting to me that it doesn't matter if I'm talking to a big finance guy in banking, or a guy in internet security, or a blue collar guy hanging signage. You hear the same messages over and over that, you know, AI is enabling teams to turn over the back end stuff and allow them to be more customer facing and do more work.
Yeah, that is a massive thing that so many people keep missing. They just keep freaking out over AI taking jobs. Look at how many companies are bringing their people back. And dude, I'm very envious. Everybody said that project management and software engineers and people like that were going to be losing their jobs like crazy. Those people have the world at their fingertips, because those people that actually understand coding and understand technology when it comes to just the speaking the right language, you know, to the AI, can do the work of 20 people without blinking, because they know the right terminology. They know the right different coding that you can have it do. Like for me, I've done a lot with AI. I'm very I'm a big Hormozy fan. And so I did so much volume in learning AI that it negates the luck. I've practiced it, but I don't know what any of this stuff is. I have to learn it. I love snakes. And when I see Python, I'm not thinking of a code. I'm thinking of a snake, you know, and whatever snake I caught in the Everglades or when I lived in Ecuador. And so the people that learn the terminology, and I've been trying to educate myself on it, those people, they are going to win at such big levels. I think anybody that's hiring them at scale and then also leveraging AI are going to win hugely. I think there's going to be even way more jobs. I know people are doom and gloom about AI, but I think it's going to massively grow the economy, in my opinion.
Well, there have been a couple of studies that came out that really kind of end the whole AI job apocalypse argument. Basically, the data shows that companies that are embracing AI are hiring substantially more than companies that are not. Companies that are avoiding AI or shrinking, or they are not hiring very much at all. Companies that are embracing AI are hiring and growing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a real thing. And a lot of people are ignoring that or just straight up closing it off and pushing it away. But that data is there. It is happening. Every major company everyone said, oh, they're firing all these people, AI is taking over. I don't know what their reasoning was. It could have been, I have a bunch of theories, but honestly, they're hired most of them back I mean, AI is not perfect. You've got to have the human element. Even in my own company, we have multiple AI agents that I've worked and built and trained, and I still have my people review their work and make sure that there's a human element that has to be there. I honestly, I'm behind on that. I don't want any AI client facing. Even if they're perfect, I still think the human connection is needed. It's not always ones and zeros. It's not always just get the job done, send me my pictures and go home. There has to be a human connection. There has to be a relationship, and you're not going to have a relationship with an AI. I don't care how many AI girlfriends are out there. It's not going to happen. It's wild to me.
That's interesting. I was talking with someone from Google the other day, and they were saying at Google, at the Google corporate headquarters, they have all these different restaurants and cafeterias and so forth. And they tried a system where they got rid of the people taking orders and they put little pads in. You could just enter what you wanted on the pad and then go pick it up at an outlet somewhere. And the Google employees revolted. They didn't like it. They said, we want the human interaction. We want to order from a human being. That's, you know, those are part of the interactions we look forward to every day. We want that human face-to-face connection.
Yeah. And I'm an introvert. I like my alone time. I like being in the middle of nowhere, Wyoming or whatever. But I also, when it comes to the general things, like I don't want to talk to a robot. I don't like calling into a help center and talking to a robot. I want a human being. I honestly think that the value in the human connection is going to be more valuable than ever as this continues. So more clients, more customers, they are going to want the human connection. So use the AI for the back end things and just make yourself more productive in that way. But your human interaction is a critical piece. So
I think that's exactly right. I think you nailed it on the head. So Austin, thank you so much. We're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to talk about customers' perspectives and why physical branding still matters in a digital first world.
We'll be right back with more conversations at the edge of technology and transformation. Stay tuned. And we're back. And we're back. I'm Todd Thomas, and this is Infinite Future on Now Media TV. Let's look ahead.
We're continuing our conversation with Austin Park of Visual Installations. In a world dominated by websites and social media and digital ads, it's easy to forget that customers still walk into physical spaces. They still see signs. They still feel environments. They still decide whether a brand looks professional, consistent, and trustworthy. That makes signage part of the customer experience, not just decoration. So Austin, why does physical signage still matter so much in a digital-first marketplace?
I think it matters a whole lot more than people give it credit. A lot of people want to go digital. It's the New York City Times Square feel, but anybody that understands branding also knows that people look at their screens all day. They look at their phone, they look at their computer, they look at, you know, whatever digital billboard is up there. Again, I can see the attraction to it. You put the screen up once, and then anytime you want to swap your ad or what something you want to say, you just insert the new card, or actually you probably just upload it on some program. But it's kind of, It takes a little bit away from the character of a store if everything's digital, you know, not just looking at the screens, but it's kind of like looking at a screen of a picture of a piece of art versus having a piece of art on the wall. And I think most people will look at a brand and go, hey, they actually took the time, they designed this, they printed it, they applied it to the wall, it speaks to you, or they made it into a sign that makes it like a 3D look or whatever it is versus something that is fully digital. Everything is digital nowadays. And you're noticing a trend for sure of people used to go to their computer to escape the real world. Now they're escaping or getting away from their computer to go outside to escape what's now the real world. You know, like it's inverted itself since the 90s, you know? And I remember growing up with the dial-up internet and all those things. And everybody was excited at the end of the day after being outside in the sun, all to get on the computer and play a game. And now we're like, oh my goodness, can I please shut this computer? You know, like they want to touch, feel, experience. And it's a very different experience to be sitting in front of a sign mounted to the wall or applied to a wall or a wrapped vehicle with your logo on it versus just having a driving around billboard. You know, Vegas is very much, you know, the digital billboards driving down the road. But look, man, the average plumbing business, they don't want that. They just want to wrap their thing with their logo on it. And then you're still getting the same impressions. You know, how many impressions, how many eyeballs are you seeing by having it wrapped, having a sign versus the digital world. I mean, you have to do the social media, and I get that, but like the actual physical wrap on your truck is it's the social media post of blue collar or of the physical realm versus scrolling it on your phone.
No, I agree. So what does signage communicate before a customer ever even speaks to someone inside the business?
It tells you whether they care or not right off the bat. I mean, you can do the whole color psychology if you want. And, you know, the most restaurants and food, they go with the color red, or most banks and financial institutions go with blue. Blue is calm and secure. And so you can do that. But if it is a faded blue or a faded red or a faded or crooked or, you know, not a professional feel because everything is just thrown onto the wall, they're not going to trust you. If they're like, if they can't get that detail right, why would I trust you with my money? Why would I trust you with this, any service you're providing? Why would I trust you to do the plumbing in my home if you can't even get your space? Then you're even seeing that blue collar is definitely making a renaissance comeback, and I'm here for it. I'm a huge Mike Rowe fan. I have a signed whiskey bottle of his bourbon, of his whiskey. And, I've always loved him to death. And, when I was recovering as a kid from open heart surgery, I used to watch Dirty Jobs because it's the one thing that and Steve Irwin, those are the two things that I like founded how I am today. And but I think that the getting dirty and getting your hands dirty and working as a thing that most men are preferring to do those trades, you know, and more than they are going to school. And so they're making, these trades are making so much money. They actually are no longer like they used to be for me, where it's just a shop with sawdust and stuff everywhere. They're actually making these super nice signage. They are very picky about the wraps on their things now versus just slapping a magnetic logo on it. Their offices are very nice. They're not just thrown together desks. I think that they know that they understand that. People that are doing that understand that. That office, that sign, that what people see on the outside matters. I mean, it's a big deal. Like it speaks to who you are before they see you. They can decide to give you their $100,000 remodel job or not based off of your truck looks like crap. You know, yeah, it's a real thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. So what do leading retailers and national brands understand about visual consistency that smaller businesses sometimes overlook?
The details. So there are certain things that do have to be consistent across the board, but they will throw in the details that make it stand out or make it relatable. So the Fairfield from my Marriott in Jackson Hole is gonna be different vibe than the Fairfield in Atlanta, but they will still have the Marriott logo. They will still stay Fairfield. It will still have, however, the food bar, the breakfast bars in the morning, and the rooms will be approximately the same, but there will be some different mural or something of, you know, Jackson Hole, you know, the Grand Teton Mountains, or, you know, it's a cowboy state, so maybe a cowboy or bison or something like that. But in Atlanta, be very different. It could be, you know, goodness, there's tons of different history you could pick from, but there's too many to pick from when it comes to Atlanta, but there's a lot of things that can come with that. It will be Atlanta based, you know, it will be based around Martin Luther King, or it'll be based around, you know, the Revolutionary War or something like that. It was one of the original colonies. So it's like, they will split it up and make it where it's still Marriott, but it has some sort of local detail to it. It's the same thing in Venice. I have stayed at a Marriott that is an autograph selection in Venice, but it still had the Marriott logo. It still had the Marriott vibe and brand. But it was very much Venetian, you know, so it's the same thing. Paris, I could say sitting in Paris, I've stayed a Marriott there. It's a Marriott hotel, but it's got Parisian features around it. It could be World War II related, or it could be all the different things that they've done from Napoleon or whatever, but it's Marriott. And so the people that get it right, they have the key things that keep it who they are and their brand, but they'll put in the detail to make it unique. And that's a critical piece. And they pay attention to the other details too, where things are placed. That is a critical thing. People will design the wall and realize, hey, there's an outlet here, there's a light switch here, there's a mullion here or something like that. So that breaks over a part of the graph that doesn't matter. People that screw up or that don't win, they go through so much and just print the graphic, put it on the wall, and half the logo is cut out because the outlet is gleaming huge outlet right in the middle of your logo, your sign. And you know, being proactive and thinking through those details are the things that will make you win in signage and branding more than just getting signage and branding.
So how does signage and graphics affect customer trust and really the emotional feel of a space?
There's the color psychology, obviously, that plays a role with it. It speaks to professionalism versus a funky vibe. You could have the people that pay attention to doing like the directional signage, like telling people to go left, go right, turn this way, this is the exit or whatever, but keeping it on brand with your own thing. Disney and Universal are fantastic at this. They will have, you know, go this way, but it'll be in the Harry Potter logo font stuff, or they will have, you know, everything is on theme to which ride you're on. So you'll still have the directional signage, but it's on theme for Hulk or Transformers. They're very good at that. And that will speak to, you know, you guys, again, you paid attention to the details. You actually went out of your way to not just throw up signage. I mean, bad signage is worse than no signage. And, you know, you could have it cockeyed or whatever. And it's just like, damn, that just looks bad. I would rather just be a blank wall if it's going to than that. So the people that got it right, the people that keep the brand on point, it is the details. I mean, dude, again, Disney, if you ever go into Cinderella's castle, they have the little Cinderella mice way up at the top in the corner of the room. And who's going to look up there? But every now and then someone does look up there and like, oh my gosh, look, it's Gus Gus or whatever it is. And those little things matter in the signage, where the placement of the logo, the athlete you choose, the window you pick. Brands will do that with gas stations. They will buy a section of the window and they will do whatever they want there. And it, yeah, you got your Red Bull sticker there, but it's right next to these really awful signs. So you may have a bright, shiny Red Bull decal, but the rest of this looks like crap. And it's you know, you're not going to trust that gas station as much, you know?
Yeah, Disney, walking through a Disney park is really a just a masterclass in details and branding, isn't it? It's phenomenal.
They nail it. They are really good at that.
So what is the difference between installing a sign and really managing a brand environment?
The installing of the sign, it is a privilege because you're the last person to touch it and you're the last person to bring to life the brand and all of the planning and all of the printing and design and all the layouts. But actually keeping the brand on point across the spectrum, getting the details right, but also making it unique to that city or that store. It really is important. People miss the fact where we want the same exact thing across all 2,000 stores and it's just super cookie cutter. And people are like, I mean, yeah, it's consistent. You know what you're going to get, but is there any culture to that? Do you have a people that are like, oh yes, I definitely want to use this store across the board because I get the same exact thing over and over and over. And it's just that, you know, comes out of the factory cookie cutter. Or you're going to go, hey, I love that they actually took the time to look at the locals, the people that are going to be shopping there, and go, hey, we're going to keep this brand consistent, but we're going to put some pieces in there to tie in with what is like, if you do a store in the Villages, every single parking lot is half golf carts, you know, because everybody gets around it. They're all retired. They're all driving golf carts, but there's still cars, you know, parking spaces, but they know, hey, this is our customer base. We need to, you know, make sure that we make it so they want to come here and they feel safe coming here. And, you know, there's the golf cart chargers, the golf cart parking spaces, and everybody wraps their golf cart to their own little cool thing or whatever. And so like any brand that takes the time to think about where it's going to be, where their physical sign is going to be and how to get those particular customers to like shopping at your store. Those are the people that win.
Well, this really changes the way we think about brand. It's not only what people see online, it's what they experience in the real world. When we come back, we will look closely toward the future of skilled trades, work development, sustainability, and what it takes to build companies that can adapt to what is next. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
All right, I got to talk to somebody real quick right out here.
4, 3, 2, 1.
And we're back. I'm Todd Thomas, and this is Infinite Future on Now Media TV. Let's look ahead.
Welcome back. Stay connected to this show and every Now Media TV favorite live or on demand anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming. Are you on the move? Catch the podcast version at nowmedia.tv or watch it at iHeartRadio, Spotify, or anywhere you'd like to see your podcasts. Now we're back with Austin Park, founder and operator of Visual Installations, in the final segment. And I want to look forward. The future will require technology, but it will also require builders, operators, technicians, installers, and leaders who understand how to move from idea to execution. For entrepreneurs and innovators watching, Austin's story is a reminder that the next frontier may be created by people who combine craft, technology, grit, and practical intelligence. Austin, what excites you most about the future of signage, graphics, and commercial installation?
I think it's evolving very quickly. I think that there's a lot of things that will remain the same. A lot of people do like the physical signage pieces of that, and I'm here for it. I'm very excited for it. I also think they're starting to add more flair to different areas of it, for sure. Different types of material for wraps that makes it easier, make it last longer. The change in how vehicles are produced and what they look like. For instance, the Cybertruck, it's still the square footage and you still got to wrap it, but it's a lot of fun on the different things you can do. People use it for their advertising because it's just such a big, it's a humongous sign, essentially, if you put your brand on there, right? And so I think there's going to be a huge change to that with the self-driving cars, the self-driving semis and things that are coming around. I think people are going to take full advantage of that amount of square footage. And again, this is very similar to the getting impressions on social media, except for you're getting impressions in the real world of just driving around your city. So I think those are the things that are gonna keep growing, keep innovating as things go, for sure.
How do you see the role of skilled trades changing as technology becomes more embedded in every industry?
I think it's going to evolve, but I think we're in sort of a renaissance with this stuff. Mike Rowe has been beating the blue collar drum for years. So many people are now choosing to go into the trades versus going into debt with schools. I mean, plumbers and electricians are now the new millionaires over just tech bros. So I think so many venture capital firms are buying up and rolling up these smaller mom-and-pop trade companies and trying to deploy it more at scale. I mean, who's going to build a data center? The blue collar workers built America. I mean, all of them are out there doing, they're the ones who laid the electrical, laid the steel, built the ships, won the war, all the different things that they have done on you know, people could not be fighting and protecting in World War II if there weren't the people that were building the ships and people were building. And New York City is one of those things that is iconic because of how big it is and what men have done with their hands to do it. Somebody may have had to do the design and come with the stuff, but it was people with their hands building these things. And so it's just going to change. It's going to evolve. I mean, you know, we're going to space. Somebody's got to build those rockets. We got to find new ways of getting fuel, new ways of producing the things that we have with the different resources, different technologies. And so somebody's got to keep up with the data centers. It's not just going to AI guys that are going to be doing it. Somebody has to build, protect, and maintain those things. And dude, I love hearing the stories of the blue collar coming through where a white collar failed. Nothing against white collar. I'm just very pro blue collar. There was one of my favorite stories. Mike Rowe actually posted this. Was this kid came into the emergency room and had he had got his. It's like a pipe, or it was a metal pipe, a copper pipe or something like that, stuck around his finger, and the doctors couldn't figure out how to get it off, and they went and got the maintenance guy in the hospital to do what the doctors couldn't, and he used a little Dremel tool and cut it right off, and the boy was obviously fine. But it's like, we are going to be more, the blue collar world is going to evolve in a great way. And I know it's a little long-winded, but here's a perfect example of how AI incorporated in a blue collar world helps. Okay. My AC died, which is like the last thing you want to happen in Florida in the summer. And it was 10 o'clock and I was like, dadgum, I had to go outside. I couldn't figure out why the breaker was popping. Where's the short? What's going on? And so I just took a video and put it on to Grok and was like, hey, troubleshoot this with me on where I need to go and what these, what to do with the multimeter to figure out where this is at. Gave me a whole layout on things to do to figure out where the problem was, what part was broken, ordered the thing, replaced it myself. You know, now put that at scale with people that are skilled. How much faster will they diagnose the problem? How much faster will they replace it? And how, you know, what are all the things they're doing just at scale? And I was just thinking about this literally today while I was driving. You have these signs that have to be put up around the building. You can now, I would be interested to see this, upload the layout into an AI and then take a video of the same space and be like, okay, now can you put the signage over where this is going to go based on the layout? And now you have a video with where everything is going. And maybe the AI will tell you, hey, it's going to go here. Keep an eye on this because the graphic that they shipped you is this size and you might need to shift it this way or that way or whatever, you know? And so I think it's, again, it's just going to make us more productive in the field. Honestly, I think it'll help us keep us from making more and more or fewer and fewer mistakes and make us more productive. Yeah.
Well, I think that we're seeing that in white collar and in blue collar, particularly around entry level hiring, right? Companies are hiring, you know, entry level people, and they're pairing them with AI, just like the story you just told, right? Figuring out your electrical panel and your AC using an AI tool to help you, right? You figured it out, you solved it yourself. So all these companies are hiring entry-level people, pairing them with AI, and they were able to do so much more quickly. That again, like we talked about in one of the earlier segments, companies that are really embracing AI, those are the ones that are hiring the most right now.
Yeah, that 100%. You've nailed it. And I was telling that to my team today, the different things that I've been building with our own agents inside of our project management tool. And I was like, I'm really excited to show you guys this. I think you are going to love it because all the problems you're telling me that we're having, this will solve about 90% of them if done correctly. Now, as pro AI as I am, I'm very careful to give it very narrow insight and narrow window of what it can and can't do because I don't want to just make changes. I mean, wasn't there that company that I think the AI spent like $500 million in tokens or something like that? Or it was, you don't just let it go. You got to be very strict on what it can do, what it's allowed to do, when to do it, and make sure it has a timeout so that it doesn't just spend all your money. So there are things to do. So I'm very pro AI, but I'm also very wary to just let it go, let it fly, you know? So.
Absolutely. What would you like young people to understand about the opportunities available in blue collar entrepreneurship?
They're the new billionaires. It's a renaissance. I'll say that till I'm blue in the face. People need to get on board with the people that build America, people that build the world in general. It's not the people that are just getting their art degree. There are people that, you know, get your art degree, that's fine. But if you want to win at a high level, if you want to be able to provide on one income for your family, blue collar is the way to go. You can still do white collar stuff. You can do the AI stuff. There are more opportunities today than ever before. And no, it's not popular to say, but I believe it with all my heart. I am a backwoods redneck from nowhere, Tennessee, and I have learned a lot from things like with AI and incorporating that into my knowledge of the world. I grew up on a farm. I grew up doing blue collar. I've traveled the world doing humanitarian work, and I am very good with my hands. I've remodeled most homes that I buy, but pairing that with what I'm learning with AI is going to take me further than I thought possible. Things that I never even considered. It's a big deal. So the trades are where it's at. Learning to work with your hands, even if AI takes over, those are the jobs that are going to be around the longest and for sure. So don't go into a ton of debt to get a degree that you're never going to use or that's going to be not needed. But pay attention because all the things like with AI, so many other jobs are created. When people, if you would have told someone 100 years ago, you know, you're going to need to have an antivirus software, they would have been like, what's an antivirus software? Like, what are we talking about? What's the software? You know, and so as we went through the Industrial Revolution and as we turned into the internet age and all the things, everybody was scared it's going to end the world, all these things, it just made new things. And there are different jobs that we're not even thinking about right now. And so in my head, being skilled with your hands is so critical. It's so critical. I saw a story, this is related, but it's a little offshoot of it. They were talking about how low the barrier of entry is to be a general contractor and the dangers of that. And because anybody can just take the test, that's a multi-choice open book thing, and become, not every state, it was that particular state. And like, that is going to be the good ones that are good with their hands, that do, are good general contractors, that do understand it and have gone through this much more extensive education on building homes. Those are the ones that are going to be around still. Not the ones that just took the tests with their $50, used AI to make these systems and hired it all out and did all things. It's the people that have the real life world skills. I mean, it's the way to go.
So what can business owners do to make the trade-based careers more attractive, respected, and future ready?
You have to blend modern technology with using real branding with real skill. You have to cover all the bases, because as I said earlier, the details in your own branding and your signage is a critical element for people to trust you. You have to have the skills to be in the blue collar work that you are professional, you are good, you get the job done correctly, you think ahead, all the things with that. But then you can charge what you want if you're that skilled and you're the person that's standing out and you're utilizing the technology to ensure that you are getting more done and you're charging more, you can pay people better. All those things come to play.
Well, Austin, thank you so much. Thank you for bringing this practical and powerful perspective to Infinite Future. This conversation reminds us. Yeah, you bet. Our pleasure. This conversation reminds us that the future is not only about breakthrough technology, it is about the people who can take ideas out of the abstract and bring them into the real world with discipline, quality, and trust. For everybody watching, the question is not only what future do we imagine, the question is what future are you willing to build? I'm Todd Thomas. This is Infinite Future. We'll see you next week.